some things at the end of April, even though maybe it's May. Who could say? I don't know. I never remember to plan what I'm going to say in advance. John, how are you doing?
Oh, man. I am doing the same as I always am when you ask me that.
Yeah, it's always a good part of the conversation where it's like, what do we even do to start off the show?
Yeah. One of our hallmarks is our extreme professionalism.
Oh, yeah. We're really good about talking about the local weather, but also not talking about where we live.
Which isn't Houston, Texas.
Yeah, the mystery weather of some place
that our fan can't figure out.
Our one fan who could say where they live. John, what is the movie we are watching today, or reviewing today, and have previously watched?
Yes, we are watching a good choice, a little sort of cult classic, I guess. It's not sort of, it is a cult classic. It's 2002's May by Lucky McKee.
I've got to say, one of the more entertainingly named horror directors of our generation.
Yes, every time before I knew who he was, every time I saw his name, I thought he made westerns. Howdy, I'm Lucky McKee.
He does a lot of movies with the star of this film, Angela Bettis, including The Woman, which was alongside Lauren Ashley Carter and Sean Bridgers, who co-starred in Jugface, and also in that movie was Pollyanna McIntosh. That was, in my mind, his second best movie.
Yeah.
And he also starred in a reverse role with Angela Bettis whenever they made a movie called Roman, where he plays the main character who falls in love with people that he sees and wants to cut body parts. And she was the director.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it comes full circle.
Yeah, it comes full circle.
Yeah.
full circle coming.
Oh, shit.
And that was the secret theme of this episode.
That's right. Welcome to Love Some Things, you dick.
Speaking of Angela Bettis, we previously saw her in the remade for TV version of Carrie, where, surprise, surprise, she has an eye-crossing problem.
Yeah, that's... she's known for a few things. One, acting really weird, and the other, crossing her eyes on camera.
Yeah, real good at it.
Yeah. You go, girl.
The movie also stars Jeremy Sisto, who I keep thinking is more famous than he is. I guess because his name sounds famous, but really he's not been in a whole lot of other notable things. The only thing that I saw that I was like, ooh, was Wrong Turn. And here he plays Adam.
He was kind of a early 2000s heartthrob there for a stretch.
Was he like a Dawson's Creek type guy?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know exactly where he, you know, where he came from, where they saw him in, you know, what they saw him in that drew their attention. But I just remember, like, I remember his name too from that, and his face from that time period. There was him, and then there was that really tall guy with the long nose who kind of looked like Scottie Pippen, that was like in everything for several years, and then they both just vanished.
A tall guy with a nose like Scottie Pippen.
Yeah, you know,
gone. He's
that guy.
Gone. We no one knows where that guy went.
He was in 6 feet Under. I remember that, but that was a long time ago.
There's going to be someone now. Now someone listening to the podcast is like, oh, I know who they're talking about. Ah,
that's Junior Dingleberries.
Oh, yes. Dingleberries the former.
Oh, man. I can't wait. Jeremy Sisto was in 6 feet Under. And the guy I'm talking about, his name is Eric Balfour.
Oh, hey, that sounds familiar. Oh, yeah. No, I think I'm thinking of Eric Bana. I can't picture Eric Balfour.
Eric Bana would be an interesting choice. Wow. Eric, yes. I see why he's not in anything anymore. Now he looks, I don't know what he looks like. He looks like a giant fisherman or something. I don't know.
This movie also stars Anna Faris, who you might know from her role in the movie House Bunny and her recurring role in the Scary Movie franchise and her role, I believe, as Chris Pratt's ex in real life.
Yeah, that's right. She was married to him, with him, at him, through
yeah,
him.
Yeah, she was married to with him.
Yeah, she was married to with him up until 2018, where things fell apart, and then she married some other guy. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, good for her. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Chris Pratt kind of looks like a Pratt.
Yeah, he seems like a really funny, fun guy to be around, but apparently he's a Christian douche.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to marry a Schwarzenegger.
Fuck that guy.
And that's celebrity gossip with Loathsome Things.
TMZ, are you listening?
Will Jennifer Aniston ever find love?
What the fuck?
She's here as Polly in a very on-the-nose name for her character, but it was 2002, so maybe not everyone was familiar with how on-the-nose the name was. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Also, we have James Duval, who I only know as Frank, the bunny-costumed man in Donnie Darko.
Yes.
In that movie, he played Frank. In this movie, he plays Blank.
Yeah, he plays Blank and not Frank.
Blank.
Yeah.
No, not Frank.
If you need a guy with Ank in his name, he's the one for you.
Yeah.
Totally worth it.
If you need a guy with... I don't know, I guess Elmer's glue in his hair?
Yeah.
I don't know how he got that exact sheen and texture, but ooh boy, is it good.
By the way, the always disgusting Ken Davidian is in this movie. He plays the veterinarian, and he also famously runs around naked in Borat.
Oh, that's that guy?
Yeah, that big hairy dude.
Nice, yeah. He's funny in this one. He like the scene where he's like, ah, yes, yes, good. Now Kitty won't die.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. And good. By the way, Lucky McKee is one half of a pretty cool power couple. Whoa, a real
one.
Yeah. Yeah, his wife was Vanessa, is a pretty badass visual artist.
Follow her on Twitter or wherever she is now. That isn't Twitter. I don't know. I haven't seen.
They're both pretty active on Hex.
God, I can't call it that. It's so stupid. You know how they'll, like, embed a tweet into a web page, and then in the upper right corner, there's the X logo, but it just looks on what you would click on to close the window out? Mm-hmm. I keep seeing that, and I keep thinking, did you do that on purpose? Did you make the logo for your rebrand of the, like, real place on the internet be the thing that people go when they're tired of looking at something and want it to go away? Like, what's the play here?
Probably so. I mean, he is a conniving bucket of shit.
Ugh, he really is. Ugh. Oh, no. All right. Well, on that note...
The movie opens, we see some fabric patterns, like a graphic of some fabric patterns being stitched together. Great. Hard cut to May, our hero, sort of, who is screaming with a bloody cloth over her eye. Then we cut to May when she was a wee lass, and her mother is explaining to her that she has a lazy eye, so therefore she must wear a pirate's patch over her eye. And the reason that her mom wants her to wear the patch is so that kids won't pick on her. Great.
Good job, mom.
Yeah, she is left the fuck alone. Cut to a few years later, it's May's birthday. Her mom, and I guess it's her dad, who he's just a tool, whoever he is.
He's the worst.
Her mom gives her quite the present. She gives her Susie, a creepy-as-fuck doll that her mother made and put inside a box with a glass window and doesn't... She won't allow May to take her out of the box because Susie is special. No baggage there, girl.
Nope.
Back to the adult, sort of, May, who is talking to Susie and telling Susie how she saw a boy who is just perfect, but that... sometimes you meet some dudes who are just dudes.
Damn.
And, you know, as an example, we see her sitting on the bench at a bus stop next to some guy, and she's giving him the hello, and he walks away because he's creeped out by her. I believe this is shot in Hollywood because it looks like Hollywood, and it's full of gross-looking people outside, just like Hollywood.
Yeah, not like Houston, Texas at all.
Nope. Oh, but this boy that she hath seen, he's different. She likes all of him, and including especially his beautiful hands. She suspects that the doll is jealous, and oh no, she is cross-eyed. Great. That's important. So she goes to the optometrist, and he's going to give her contact lenses because it's not really bad, and these contacts will straighten her eyes out. Okay. Whatever. She's super stoked because she doesn't have to wear glasses on her date that she doesn't actually have. We cut to her stalking the mechanic dude that's perfect at a cafe. I don't think they're at the cafe, but she's stalking the dude anyway. Spoiler alert. She works at the Sarkeesian Animal Hospital with another young lass who goes by the name of Polly. Polly chats up May on the stairs of the vet's place after work. Polly is carving up a pumpkin because Halloween is coming up. And she asks her if they want to hang out, and Polly's obviously kind of into May. Great. Later on, May goes home, and she puts in her contacts, and she's super excited. And then we kind of notice in the background that she has an inordinate amount of dolls.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Now she's, again, we see her trying very unsuccessfully to get Adam to notice her. It's really uncomfortable. Back at work, this fucking douchey guy comes in. This is really not relevant, but I just had to bring it up. This douchey guy comes in and tells this ridiculous story about how his dog is missing a leg, and he's upset, and he wants to know if he could, you know. It's just like, what is going on here?
And how it impacts the dog's ability to play fetch.
That's right. I guess the idea is that it's going to give her some ideas later. Anyways, back at home, she's prancing around in front of the mirror, acting like she's hot, trying to psych herself up and you know, convince herself that she would be desirable for the perfect man. She makes her own sexy outfit in her mind. Then she puts it on and follows Adam into a cafe, braless, nips akimbo. She struts back and forth in front of him. He's completely not paying attention. He's reading or doing something. And she just kind of goes back and forth. It's hilarious. And then he nods off. And while he's sleeping, she creeps up to him and is like rubbing her face on his hand as if he's caressing her. He wakes up. And she runs off. She, like, splits. And he's kind of like, what the hell was that? So we're back to work now. And she's playing poke the thumb with a scalpel. And then Polly's like, oh, what are you doing? That looks interesting. And so she pokes Polly's thumb. And then Polly's like, oh, my God, why did you? Well, actually, I kind of like it. Don't, you should do it again. Polly's something else.
She really is. Yeah. She's like blissed out on everything.
Oh, man. Dog leg guy shows up with the dog leg and asks May if she can sew it back on. And she says, I could. At the laundromat, May is doing laundry next to Adam. And she ends up sharing her powdered detergent with him and spilling it all over him. But that's her way of breaking the ice. So they make introductions. She's, of course, beside herself. They shake hands, and then he asks her if she wants to go outside and smoke. You want to smoke a cigarette? And outside, they have a very awkward conversation, and then she drops her panties on the ground from her laundry and bends over and sticks her ass right in his face to pick it up. She's trying to set up seeing him, basically, and he gives her some BS about, Oh, no, no, no. She sees his Ninja Turtle underwear, and he says they belong to his girlfriend, and then he's like, oh, ex-girlfriend. And it's like, when he says his girlfriend, she makes the sad face, and then he's like, ex-girlfriend, and then her smile perks up. And then he gives her his fake brand cigarettes, even though when he's smoking them, they have Camels on them. And then,
yeah.
And then he bails. It back on the elevator, back going home, is making up conversations with herself, like as if she's talking to Adam. She's on the elevator, super stoked, very excited. They meet up in a park, and she tells him a really gross story about dog guts because he likes weird stuff. And so it's weird stuff time. They plan to meet later, and she is like holding his hand, won't let go of his hand, and then he says, do you want to take it home?
She's super into it. There's lots of stuff where she's making like direct eye contact with his hands, not him.
It's yes, very googly.
Kind of awesome.
Googly eyes on his hand.
Yeah. So she goes home and she sews herself a special date dress and plays kissing with her dolls, including like a boy doll that has big red glowing boxer hands and like plays like with the boxer hands caressing the other doll's face, but not Susie. Susie stays in her fancy ornate case and watches all of this going on. We can see that like there's a crack in the glass just up at the corner of Susie's case, but it's nothing extreme at this point.
No.
And then they go on a date where they sit in the cabin of an old, obviously smelly junker automobile while he eats a jar of salsa off the front of the car, and they just kind of sit there. She tells him she's never had a boyfriend before. He says that she's weird, but that he really likes weird a lot. So then they go to his I want to fuck you like an animal bedroom, possibly in his mom's house. It's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah.
And play sexy, sexy stab one another with one of those little plastic spring knives. They kiss. She goes in for the hard kiss. He trips over himself a bit and makes fun of her and asks her, who taught you how to kiss? And she whispers, Susie. And then she goes home angry and like smashes the top of Susie's little ornate case, which makes the glass crack and cuts the bottom of her hand a little. The next day at work, she's got a bandage on her hand. Polly comes after her, asks her what happened to her hand. She's like, scoople, because that's a joke between the two of them, because the veterinarian can't pronounce words right, and Polly sucks at interpreting him, but Aunt May knows what he's talking about every time. And it goes on to Polly asking her if she likes pussy.
Yeah.
Cats.
Get it?
Yeah. She then flirt-nipulates May into taking her aunt's unwanted cat in a very strange scene. So May is gonna get her own kitty. We see her leaving very awkward voicemails for Adam. He won't call her back. He hasn't been showing up to the washateria. So she puts on her springiest dress and goes to his doorstep and waits in front of his door for 2 hours until he leaves the house with a backpack, because he's a full-grown adult, and jump scares him, brings him back over to her house so that they can watch his movie after drinking yellow Gatorade out of wine glasses. Then they sit down to watch his movie. It's about a couple of young picnickers sexually eating each other. She thinks it's sweet. And then they get down to some very hand-centric loving, but May gets a little bit blood kinky, and that directly softens Adam's pants. He leaves, saying this is too weird, and then as he's leaving, he hears May yell at Susie. The next night, she lurks on his doorstep and hears him calling her a weirdo that he managed to escape. She visits Polly for a very neck-focused girl-on-girl session, but Polly also has a pant-dryingly enormous mole on her finger, and that pretty much ends that.
Sorry. pant dryingly enormous mole on her finger. Okay, gather. Okay, I'm good. Polly is out at the park, and she's watching some kids play, and becomes particularly interested in a blind girl who's fumbling around.
Not good.
It's like, wow. Wow. So, in typical May fashion, she concocts this fantastic idea and heads over to the counter of a daycare, which is apparently being manned by a member of Bikini Kill.
Yeah.
And then she volunteers to watch the blind kids. I'm assuming because they can't see her. And so I don't know what the fuck, why she, I,
yeah,
whatever. So she volunteers. Yeah. It's like, okay, that's great. So then they have this weird back and forth about, you know, well, does it matter which blind kids or whatever? So anyways, she gets the gig. I don't know how. And at the place with the kids, she meets this blind girl named Petey, who is making an ashtray out of clay. And sorry. And then May's like, oh, do you smoke? She's like, no, you smoke. And she says, that's right, I do. And then the girl says, you can have it. And she puts her name on it, presses her name into the ashtray. And it's not weird, even a little bit.
No.
Meanwhile, May goes back to stalk Adam again at his house. And she's all gussied up in another weird-looking outfit that she's made, I assume. His roommate is doing sit-ups or push-ups, I forget. You can see him keep popping up in the window. And then Adam opens the door, and his hand is hanging out the door with a cigarette, so he's, you know, almost seeing her. But instead, he doesn't see her, and he's in there talking shit about how crazy she is, and he's so glad he got away from her. And then all of a sudden, there's another girl there, and it's not going well for May at this point.
No.
She runs into him again at the laundromat. She tries to talk to him, but he's like, later. And then she heads over to Polly's because, you know, what else is she going to do? Polly is, as it turns out, hooking up with a girl who is swinging her legs back and forth in the doorway as if she works for a strip club in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And then Polly gets super jealous. Polly doesn't get jealous. May gets super jealous. And Polly's like, oh, are you jealous? You know you're my number one mama, or whatever the fuck she says.
Yeah.
And, yeah, May runs the fuck away, as probably she should. Back home, she cries. She's very upset. She trashes a whole fuck ton of dolls sitting on the floor in a pile of doll parts. And then she decides that she wants to play with her cat, who I believe his name is Loopy?
Yeah,
and
something like that.
He hisses at her, so she completely murders him with the ashtray.
Yeah.
Just by throwing it at him, and it hits him and causes carnage in the bathroom. Which was very strange. Afterwards, she's in the shower, and she is hearing, quote-unquote, the glass cracking more and more on the doll box, on Susie's box home. And she screams, shut up, and then the sound stops, and she's got herself back together. So she calls Adam, who is very short with her, trying to get off the phone. We hear glass cracking again. She's kind of pressuring him to see her. He gives her like a half kind of like, yeah, maybe later or tomorrow. And, you know, so she's like, great, I'll see you tomorrow. We hear more cracky glass. She's not just weird. She's pretty much out of her mind.
Yeah.
She tells the doll that I hate you because it's the doll's fault.
Yeah.
At the daycare, she has, it's show and tell. And she's brought her doll to show and tell, her doll that's in a box with a window. And has all her friends try to figure out what her best friend is or something.
This is my best friend.
And they all come up and they're touching it, running their hands over it, trying to figure out what it is. And, you know, they just think it's a box. They think her best friend is a box. Then, you know, she tells them what's going on. They want to play with it. She doesn't tell them, I think. They want to play with the box, but she declines, and they end up getting in like a tug of war. And, of course, the box slips out of everyone's hands yes. and falls in slow motion to the ground where it breaks. The glass shatters open. And all the kids drop to the floor because they want to find the... They want to find May's best friend, and they're crawling on their hands and knees all over broken glass. The sheet of glass had really broke into a remarkable amount of shards. That's pretty much the end of the gig for old May there. Probably not going to be... why do I sound like Norm MacDonald?
Oh, good.
Pretty much the end of the gig there for old May. So... I'm an idiot. We see her back, getting back on the, she's all bloody and stuff now, by the way. She gets up back on the elevator and startles the elevator fuckers.
Yeah.
Back home, she tries to reassemble Susie, kind of, in a bloody mess.
Yes.
But it's not really working out so great. She goes to get Loopy, his corpse, from the bathroom, or wherever he is. I think he's still in the bathroom. And I guess she gets blood in her eyes because they're stinging like crazy. And she has a little eye freak out scene. And then we cut to her laying in bed with doll arms over her eyes. And the phone rings and the answering machine gets it. It's Polly, who is wondering where she is because she's missed 2 days of work. And Mr. Sarkeesian or whatever his name has been asking about her.
Okay.
Yeah, so she gets up and goes to check herself out in the mirror. She's very bloody. Her eyes are really fucked up and have gigantic red contact lenses around her pupils. So it looks like she got hit in the face with like a pole or something. I mean, it's nasty looking. Then she grabs a can of air spray and hoses down the cat because, you know, he's rotting. And then she goes out and sits at the bus stop again. And meets a punk rocker type guy with what basically has metal guy hair, but that's like,
yeah,
I don't egg whited into long mohawk-y things. I don't know what is going on with his hair.
Yeah, it's like,
he's Raggedy Ann.
He's got like Liberty spikes, but they've all drooped, or most of them have drooped, and so it's just the strangest punk rock hairdo you could ever wish to see and or wish to never have seen.
It's like a greasy zero gravity Bob Marley or something.
Oh, yes. I would listen to that album.
He's another actor I've seen in a bunch of things. I don't know why, because he's fucking terrible. Yeah. But he is funny. So they start chatting, and she mentions, as people are walking by, so many pretty parts, no pretty holes. He accompanies May back to her place because he thinks he's getting lucky, and you can pretty much tell from the look on her face that that's not happening.
Nope.
They eat candy. He eats with his mouth open and smacks a lot, which is really fucking gross. And then he's like, man, it's really hot in here. Man, I guess I'm gonna have to take my shirt off because it's really hot. It's really funny, actually. And he's got this Frankenstein tattoo on his arm, and she talks about how she really likes it. She just likes it.
Yeah.
She's really lusting after it. And then he says, "Hey, man, I gotta get some ice cubes or rub on my nipples because it's really hot in here." So he gets up and goes to the freezer and opens it up and finds Loopy saran wrapped in the freezer, and he like loses it and calls her a freak, and she gets very upset and picks up a pair of scissors and stabs him in the top of the skull. And then we get a really gruesome, like, kind of like the gross out montage of all the bloody gross scenes that, you know, have happened so far in the movie. Always good to just throw a montage in there. Back to the Liberty douche, who's dead on the floor, a bed sheet over him, blood everywhere, and she says, I need more parts. She's back at the park, and Adam just shows up out of the blue. And for some strange reason, he's nice again. And yeah, she takes his hand, and you know, she's about to kiss his hand. He pulls back his hand, and then all of a sudden he's like, well, I gotta go. And he leaves. At work, May is measuring Polly's neck because she wants to make a dress for you. And then we find out that Polly and May are talking, and we find out, this is after work, that Polly has a new friend who pops out of the ladies' room. It's Ambrosia. It's like, who looks like she's about 7 feet tall and blonde, and she's wearing a mini skirt, and May looks down and goes, "Nice gams." May takes a couple digs at Polly because she's still kind of jealous. She takes a couple digs at Polly about Polly's mole, which makes her really, if I were you, I'd have that removed.
Yeah.
while Polly, like back inside the vet's office, the three girls are in there, and Polly and Ambrosia are, yeah, I know you. And while that's going on, May goes over and gathers up a whole bunch of veterinary surgical tools and takes off on her way home.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yes.
I like how Polly's first girlfriend, all we see of her are the legs, and then her second girlfriend is also legs, almost like it could have been the same girlfriend. But whatever, it's fine.
I know, it's great. I was like, well, it's supposed to, they make a point of telling you it's someone else, I guess, just to give you the idea that this girl is sleeping around, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, she has to fulfill the slut role in order for this movie to work, but it's whatever. It's fine. Yeah. May then is going, like, May is kind of like getting turbocharged at this point. We see the third act coming, the tone shifts, and we hear her quote her mom, "If you can't find a friend, make one." And she's on her way back to Polly's house now after preparing a bunch of stuff. They get a little cozy. And May sits, like, Polly is sitting on the floor below May, with May, like, up on the couch above her, with Polly's, like, neck basically between her legs, and they're both facing the same direction. And then all of a sudden, May pulls out, she's double-wielding scalpels, and she starts, like, rubbing them up and down tenderly on Polly's neck, and Polly's like, oh, yes, oh, yeah. And then she, like, looks up at her adoringly and seductively says, "I know you'd never hurt me, May," right before May just, like, and just cuts Polly's neck all the way open and stares into her eyes as Polly slowly, but possibly a little bit, like, blissfully dies. Like, it,
yes.
It seemed like she had a good time dying, which is real dark.
Yeah, Polly's a complicated character.
She really is. At this point, Polly's friend with the legs shows up, and her and May have a whole uncomfortable conversation where she has she has Ambrosia turn around so she can get a look at them legs, and then stabs her in either side of the skull with the scalpels. Now so May good. Is walking down the sidewalk with a very full rolling cooler. She goes to Adam's house. His girlfriend invites her in because she's like, "Ooh, this is May. This is going to be good." And he's like, "Thank you for that." Then they have really uncomfortable stuff with, like, drinking and touch my face, and they're both drunk, and like, she's trying to, like, prove her ownership of Adam, and Adam's just a real piece of shit. Like, I don't know if we've hammered home how piece of shit Adam is, but he's, like, all throughout this movie, there are these points where you just kind of want to yell at the screen and be like, "Dude, get out of there. You need to get out of this situation." But then also you're like, "No, maybe this is fine."
Yeah, maybe ride this one out.
Yeah, you go, Adam. And here, in fact, Adam does go, and we get to watch May kill first the girlfriend and then Adam himself, and chop off his hands. Also, I don't know, because she mentions that she really likes the girl's earrings, and it's like, well, what are you gonna do?
That's take the ears?
Yeah, it's fine. But we do get to, we see her, like, she's now home, she's got the cooler, she takes out a wrapping of cloth out of the cooler, and we see there's Adam's just perfect hand, just the right amount of fur on the knuckles, you know, it's just perfection. Mm. Chef's kiss.
Ah, c'est magnifique.
At home, she then does a almost ritualistic cleaning off the blood that she is covered in, and then gets down to sewing. We see lots of sewing of regular clothes, which after interspersed with some stitching of body parts, and after a while you start to get the idea that maybe this cloth sewing is symbolic for all of the gross meat sewing that she's actually doing. And since there isn't a good head to deal with, she stitches a weird scrap cloth mask head shaped thing and just gets that in on top of the neck of her composite thing, and there it is. There's a whole person cut together from the various parts, and she's like, all of the parts are there, it's perfect. And then she just spends some time basking in the beauty of her creation. But what's this?
Oh,
it can't see her.
Oh, no.
It can't see her. So she tries her glasses. She puts her glasses on its stupid mask face. She has, like, beads and shit for eyes on it, and that's not working either. None of this is working. It's no good. Then she realizes what she must do, and then she spends some time hyperventilating and slowly coming to terms with the impending loss, and then finally, like, building up her willpower and her determination, she grabs a pair of scissors and shoves them into her lazy eye socket, pops out that bad, bad eye, and puts it on in, like, the eyeball hole of the head thing that she made, and then is crying and is bleeding profusely. It's the first scene that we saw in the movie where she's looking in the mirror, yep, and screaming. That's this eye popping out scene. And then she kind of slowly just collapses onto it with her head resting on her creation's shoulder as the blood drains out of her body. And upset and blood loss war for her to slowly trail off into nothingness. But just before she does, her creation reaches up with one perfect hand and caresses her face. Movie over. Aww.
Oh, man. That's nicely done. Very nice. Oh. fine work.
So let's go ahead and rate it and then talk about all the bits. John, if you had to rate this one on a scale of 1 to 5 loathsome things, how would you go about it with this one?
I gave it a 3.4.
Dang.
This is another one of those weird ratings where it's like, I like this movie a lot more than the rating, I guess, but the rating is more like, I guess my ratings are more like evaluations of criteria. And you know, so whatever. If I was rating it on, like, just feelsies, I'd probably give it like a 4 or maybe a 4.25 or something. I don't think it's like a perfect 5 or anything. It's definitely got some issues. I mean, it's, I don't care about it being low budget or that, you know, I like that it's funny, but I also get tired of the kind of like wackiness of it, you know, and but I mean that's just kind of the way that he plays it for this movie. But anyways, yeah, I gave it a 3.4. What about yourself?
I gave it a perfect 5, but that's also because I have, like, no objectivity when it comes to this movie. Like, this movie is, like, a big part of, like, what my opinion of horror movies was formed around. So it's like, yeah, this one to me is just perfect. I've been watching it for forever. This is one, like, the first time I saw it, it was I found it on the shelf of old horror DVDs at Hollywood Video, like, not the new releases.
Nice.
And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna watch this. I bet this is gonna be good. And it's just great. So yeah, for me it's a 5, but it's not actually a 5, but, you know, it's a Josh 5.
No, I totally get it. Yeah, yeah, it holds a special place in your heart.
Exactly. Yeah. We've talked before about horror movies that love horror movies, and this is kind of like apex horror movie that loves horror movies. You mentioned the Frankenstein tattoo. Also, I forget what movie it is, but like fucking Adam was gonna go see a Dario Argento film. There's a poster of Argento in his room. It's got a lot of weird complexities going on. It's basically a reverse slasher. So like, this is the type of movie where you would normally not see it from May's perspective. You would see it from these other characters and try to figure out who's the one doing all of these killings. But instead, we're getting this role reversal, and we're getting it from the psycho killer, who even has the like physical deformity that is a hallmark of the genre. Mm-hmm. And we're just like getting the weird inner world of that perspective. And that way it's also like a continuation of other horror movie tropes. Like we've got Frankenstein going on here. We've got like the movie Stitches, where there's the stitched together body in the closet, which is a fantastic scene. Maybe not a great overall movie, but a really, really good scene. And and then we've also got, it's a subversion of the manic pixie dream girl trope, where instead of, you know, like, oh, she's going to be there and she's going to validate you and she's going to make all of your things okay, it's she is going to wreck your shit, and it is not a good thing. And yeah,
she's going to torment you and then dismember you.
Yeah. She's going to be waiting outside your house, and part of you is going to think, oh, maybe it's cute. It's not.
And we're going to love her for it.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's, I just fucking love this movie. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun watching this movie. I mean, it really delivers on a bunch of different levels and pretty much throughout. I mean, the character, everybody seems to be having a good time making this movie, you know. I mean, like I said, there's definitely an element of humor to this, almost to the point of being a comedy, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it is a comedy in a certain sense, but it's definitely a horror movie as well, like you said, and it really does reference the genre, you know, lovingly, which is always awesome, and because you know that he's clearly a fan of this stuff. It's not like a cash grab or anything.
No.
And then, of course, Angela Bettis is like a fucking revelation. She's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, she totally carries the film, even though there are some good performances. Yeah, everybody does a good job, I guess, but except the punk rock guy, but he manages to be funny. Anna Faris is kind of like, she's not a great actress in this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's on purpose or she's just not a great actress. But then again, I mean, the whole thing is kind of played for camp, so... You know, if she was going to try to play it serious, it would probably be actually painful to watch. So
yeah.
I guess I'll let that slide. Plus, there's a girl in it called Ambrosia. And that, I mean, you can't really cut a movie down too deep when you have someone named Ambrosia in it.
Yeah. When you've got a Polly, an Ambrosia, a Blank, and an Adam Stubbs, who's going to have his hands cut off.
Adam Stubbs. Oh my god.
Yeah.
And a cat, I think, named Loopy. I can't remember.
It's good. It's
good
really
stuff.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, don't know about Anna Faris's character in here. I think it's just very like time capsule. So instead of doing like the slutty cheerleader that would normally go in this spot, they went with a polyamorous Molly goth. Like she's always like not quite on the downslope of the MDMA, but also not on the full high. She's just kind of in this vague blissed out state of not understanding what the veterinarian is saying.
That's right. She's riding the crest of like right between being high and coming down.
Yeah. She's just always in there and just as predatorially lesbian as possible.
Yeah, she's pretty hyper sexed up.
It's
quite a sight to behold. She's entertaining.
Yeah, it's like the grossest, always like dripping sexual guy, but not a penis.
With a giant hairy mole on her finger. A wonderful touch.
Just an entire hair growing out of a pepperoni mole right there.
I love that Lucky McKee was sitting down writing this movie and thought, you know what, I'm going to give Polly a gigantic hairy mole on her finger that freaks May out.
May's having a, that's fine, whatever, this is fine time, until all of a sudden she's just like,
and then she gives her shit for it later, which is just the best.
Yeah.
If I were you, I'd have that removed.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Boy. So that's an 8.4 out of 10 Lonesome Things. It's a solid watch. You should go watch it. If you are like us or me and you use Just Watch to find out where movies are available, you might be out of luck because Just Watch has done a, you know, inshittification and has turned into a, you know, just a platform for shilling paid movie stuff. But yeah, so May is available on Roku. I know it's available on some other ones. I don't know which ones because Just Watch doesn't want to show you that anymore. So if you know of a good service to use that's like what Just Watch used to be, let us know because that'd be neat to have back.
Yeah, it was a great idea that they got rid of.
Yeah.
And now they're just another generic movie site.
Yeah.
It was fucking stupid. But Tubi has it, and I think even Pluto has it. And then you can, of course, rent it if you're, you know, not paying. I mean, if you're into paying for things, you don't have to.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure Lucky gets like 20 cents of every rental or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Just watch it on Tubi and send Lucky a $5 bill.
Yes, please. Care of Loathsome Things.
Yes. His biggest fan.
Oh, fantastic. So, John, have you been consuming any other horror-related medium that you feel like sharing with the audience?
Yeah, I saw a couple movies on the old Shudder. I saw a movie called The Tunnel, which was an Australian found footage film about a news crew that goes into the tunnels underneath Sydney, I believe it is, and, you know, encounter some weirdness. It's actually really good. I mean, especially for a film that was entirely crowdfunded, and they were winging basically the production of the film as they were crowdfunding it. So what they decided to do was sell each frame of the film for $1 Australian.
Nice.
And they were able to raise $40,000, and that basically got them off the ground. And then they changed tack and started funding it another way. They have the movie on Shudder, which is fun, and I definitely recommend it. And then they have the making of documentary, which is like an hour and a half long. If you watch maybe the first half hour, you get what you need out of it.
Nice.
So that was cool. I enjoyed that movie. And then I saw a Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, was that good?
I liked it. I liked the 70s setting. I won't give anything away because it just came out and you probably haven't seen it either, but I like the setting. The characters are fun. I like David Domitian is fun to watch, and it gets batshit crazy near the end. It's not as great as everybody has been saying it is, but I guess it's just one of those right place, right time movies that just seems to have captured people's imagination because it, you know, did well in the theaters, especially for an Australian independent film. Of course, it has American actors in it, but
yeah.
It's good. I enjoyed it. I definitely recommend it. I thought about picking it for the show, and then I thought, no, fuck that. I'm not going to do it. How about you? Any horrorificationing in the...
Not really, no. I also watched The Tunnel, but I didn't make it to Late Night with the Devil. I saw it, and I'm like, it's one of those movies that hits me in the, oh yeah, I should get around to watching that one of these times kind of thing, where it's like, yeah, oh yeah, I see it. I pick up the gimmick. I don't know about a gimmick right now, but definitely, sure, some point I'll watch that.
Yeah, it's pretty... it's pretty predictable until it isn't. And then it's really entertaining for like 20 minutes and then it's over.
Yeah.
And it's not bad. And it doesn't, it just seems like it's getting more attention than it probably should, which is kind of mean. And I don't mean it in a mean way, but I am honest that's how I feel, but I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're pretty spot on about the tunnel. Like, it was okay.
I mean, it wasn't great. Yeah. It was all right. I thought they did a decent job, especially considering that they basically winged it. I thought they did a decent job of stringing a movie together and actually creating a little bit of tension for something that, you know, for a bunch of guys that wanted to make a movie, they didn't put much effort into doing anything original.
Yeah.
But the saving grace is that they did a decent job and it is watchable. You know, there's better underground horror movies. I mean, you know, we reviewed one. I can't, of course, remember the name because I can't remember anything.
Trying right now to find it. What was it called?
With those boys in the church, was it Final Prayer?
Final Prayer, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, with the weird, like, building of a cross on the cover.
Yeah, that was, you know, I mean, so, and that's, I mean, it you know, it's kind of like Descent. It's kind of like any movie that's shot in a drippy, you know, sewer or tunnel system or as above, so below, that kind of thing. They're always inhabited by some sort of cave thing that doesn't make any sense, but it's there. And they're all the same in that respect. But that's fine. I guess as long as you accept that, then you'll be okay. If you don't like that, then you're going to fucking hate that movie. Don't watch it, you asshole.
Yeah. Also, this was similar to the other movie we reviewed, The Boogans.
Yes, The Boogans. What a fine, fine film. And by the way, guys, if you haven't seen The Boogans and you didn't listen to our episode, just to recap, you need to go see that movie. It is great.
Yeah, you should definitely watch it without having listened to our podcast first, and just know you have to stick it out to the end because, man, that big scene at the end, mwah. I mean, there's a reason we made that movie episode number 69. All right.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So do that. Finish this episode because it's gold.
Yeah.
But then go watch The Boogans and listen to that episode.
Yeah. But yeah, the tunnel, it was like, it was quality, you know? It didn't progress the genre. It didn't, you know, like, it didn't really do a whole lot that was new, but it was very effective. It did a good job, which, you know, if you're just, like, trying to slap together a movie and that's what you're going for, like, bam, nailed it. It's not earth-shattering, but it's solid and an enjoyable thing to watch. So, hooray!
I think they 100% achieved what they were trying to achieve. Apparently, it was actually a hit in Australia. So in that sense, it was a, you know, rousing success. And here it is on Shudder. So, you know, people all over the U.S. can watch the damn thing if they want to.
And fuck all those other English-speaking countries.
I started to watch on Hulu. There's a folk horror, new folk horror film called Lords of Misrule.
Oh, yeah. And, I've been meaning to watch that one.
I got about halfway into that. I haven't finished it yet. And it's pretty good. I mean, it's, you know, again, pretty predictable. You got the, like, the maypole type thing and the weird pagan-y cult people and goodness. The vanishing girl who happens to be the daughter of the new vicar in town that nobody probably likes because she's a vicar. But, you know, it's cool.
Vicar? I hardly know her. And I've got an important question for you, John, and it's not the question that you think it is. It's that time of the year where our subscription is coming up, and I have to ask you, do you want to do Loathsome Things, a horror movie podcast, for another year?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Why the fuck not?
Yeah, me too. I am excited for this next year because it's going to be the year that we get to our 100th episode. And I feel like at that point, maybe we can rest on our laurels. I don't know. But having gotten to a podcast where we reviewed 100 movies, that's pretty rad.
I've been playing this the survival game on my phone, like this giant multiplayer game.
Nice.
And I head an alliance in the game.
Nice.
And we have Nerd. Our own Discord. I know. So we were in the Discord, and we just started the Discord, and one of the guys is like, "Hey, you co-host a podcast? A horror movie podcast?" And I was like, "Yep." He's like, "Link me up." So I sent him a link, and he's like, "Cool." And then he didn't mention it again. So I think that,
yeah.
I think that went well.
Nice.
Losing fans one at a time.
Yeah. We got one extra listen out of that plug. Good one.
He's still being nice to me in the game, so maybe he hasn't listened yet. I don't know.
Nice. That's awesome. We should probably start using Discord for this, because this fucking Facebook Messenger nonsense sucks, and I don't know why we're still using it.
Yeah, and Discord is pretty much made for this shit.
Yeah, I don't know why we're doing this to ourselves, but I already have Discord, and you already have Discord, and I don't... If we weren't using Facebook Messenger for this, I would literally never have to sign into... Oh, I still have to plug the fucking episodes, but still, I would almost... then never have to log into any Facebook or Meta owned property ever. That's the goal.
Nice. That is a good goal.
Yeah. Good goal.
Lofty.
All right. So John, now I have a follow-up question, and it had to go in this order because otherwise it was... What are we going to watch in 2 weeks hence?
I this time around, I went for something that I'm trying to remember when I first saw it. Probably as a kid watching Sunday TV, and they would show weird random horror shit. Or late Saturday night when they would show weird random horror shit.
Hell yeah.
I'm assuming that's where I first saw this movie, and it's completely ridiculous and absolutely delightful. And I've been wanting to do it for a while, so I figured, why the hell not? It is... Attack of the Mushroom People from 1963, a Japanese film, also known in Japan as Matanga. It is fucking insane.
Nice. Oh my god.
It's so good. I mean, it's terrible, but it's so good.
Oh, these monsters look so fucking awesome, though.
Oh, it's the best.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
I love that shit. Yeah, it's like the Channel 55 late night movies type stuff.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. Like the Killer Shrews, which I'll probably pick one day too.
Nice. Yeah.
The dogs, they have dogs with monster costumes strapped over their back, and they're supposed to look scary. It's amazing.
It's just a bunch of doggies running around happily running back and forth. They're just glad to see those actors, and we're supposed to be scared.
Why are you hiding under that barrel? Oh my god, that movie is so ridiculous, but I'm not ready for that one yet.
No, we still have to build up. I think this is a good stepping stone.
It is, because this movie is completely ridiculous.
Nice, yeah. We need a good crazy monster movie. That's perfect. So join us 2 weeks hence for... God, I didn't find the director's name. It's all right. For Matango, a.k.a. Attack of the Mushroom People from 1963.
Ishiro Honda.
Nice. Go.
It is, by the way, a Toho movie, so that's good to know.
Oh, hell yeah. With all of that out of the way, be good to animals and to other humans, no matter what their hands are like.
And I just want to say, as I often do, only on this show, I'm sorry you all have to die.
It's such a good way of saying farewell, you know?
I'm sorry you all have to die.